So thank you all for being here tonight and making this joyous occasion a celebration. So, I'm Vinny Capetta. I think I know most of you. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm in recovery from relationship addiction, people-pleasing, grief, anger, bitterness, and there's more. And if you ask my wife, she'll gladly let you know more about it. She'd probably say someone who has a hard time admitting that he's wrong and apologizing. But I've used the verses from Psalm 40 as a basis for my story. I grew up in Connecticut, and I was a young Catholic going to church fairly regularly. Both sides of my family were Roman Catholic, so my grandparents on one side had moved here from Puerto Rico in the 1960s, and my great-grandparents from the other side had moved here from Italy before the Great Depression. And my parents divorced when I was very young. I don't remember it, but I certainly remember the effects of it. As I grew older, I remember asking my dad all the time, how come I can only see you on the weekends? How come I can only see you on holidays? Why can't we be a family again? But my mother, pretty quickly after divorce of my father, she connected with an entrepreneur, and he was involved with erotic dancing clubs and construction and restaurants and real estate. And I later found out just a few years ago that his goal was to be the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut. I don't know, anybody know Bridgeport? Ever been through Bridgeport? Ever seen Bridgeport? I don't know why anybody would want to be the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut. But he and my mother had two boys together. And so one of them was 5 years behind me, and then and the next one was 8 years behind me. So I had two little brothers, and through the years, I remember standing at the top of the steps of our home and hearing the arguing going back and forth between my mom and my stepdad. And because of his drinking and his temper, it occasionally became physical. And several times, my mother had to call the police. And I remember spending nights in hotel rooms so that we could be safe. Yet my stepfather loved me, I believe, as if I was his own child, and I certainly loved him and appreciated him as a stepfather as I did my own father. In a lot of ways, I wanted to be like him. He had a talking sports car. Anybody remember the Datsun 280ZX? Remember that car, the talking car? He had one of those. And I thought that was the coolest thing. I always said, I want to be just like him. I want to have one of those cars. one day, my half-brothers woke me up. They dragged me into my parents' room. And my mother and my stepfather were both unresponsive. And on the ground was a gun lying on the floor. And I was only 10 years old. I didn't have any way of understanding what I had seen in that room. And so I called my aunt, the closest person to me that I knew, and she called the police, and the police came and ushered us out of the house. And the news reports, as we watched them that night on TV, said it was a murder-suicide, that my stepfather had shot my mother and that he had shot himself. And later, the news clippings reported that my mother and my stepfather were fighting about how many children that they should have, that one of them wanted to have more children and one of them didn't. And conjecture about, is this the argument that happened that caused death. I remember thinking, walking down the sidewalk that day, that this must all be a dream, that this couldn't really be happening, that this I was going to wake up from this dream. But I didn't. So I moved in with my father and my grandparents, about an hour away from where I was living before, and my brothers stayed in that home, so I had very little connection with them. And I remember crying myself to sleep so many nights, saying, God, how could you do this? How could you allow this? And there were some kids in the school, the new school that I went to, that weren't very nice. They didn't know how to treat a kid who's been through the kind of thing that I did. And I have to say, I probably never experienced so much pain. I call it slime, mud, and mire. If we look at the scriptures of Psalm 40, that's what the words that it uses. I've never experienced so much of that than I did that first year or two after my mother passed away. My father took me to a counselor, and that counselor told me that I was holding everything in, and it was like a balloon. And as the more that I kept these things inside of me, this balloon was just going to burst. And he had nailed it. That's exactly what was happening. And I was ready to burst. And I think the reason my dad took me is because he might have overheard me say that I just wish I wasn't living anymore. And the scripture says in Psalm 40, verse 1, that I waited patiently for the Lord. And he turned to me, and he heard my cry. He lifted me up out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and the mire. So God heard my prayers, even though they were angry prayers. And it didn't seem like it at the time, but he heard my prayers, and he was answering them. I was the firstborn in my family, the first grandson on both sides. So I was the king, as my grandfather would say, of all the castles, wherever I went. But now I was finding that I was spiritually poor. I was coming to realize that I was not God, and that my good life had now become unmanageable. I couldn't manage it. I couldn't control it. I was powerless, and I knew it. After years of attending church, my father finally came to a genuine faith in Jesus Christ as he attended the small Bible study. And that summer, he sent me to a Christian camp where I found the same hope that he did in the midst of all this despair. God lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock, and he gave me a firm place to stand, Psalm 40, verse 2. So in my mourning, I was comforted. I came to the place where I earnestly believed, God, you exist. And I must matter to you if you sent your son to die on the cross for me. And if you have the kind of power to raise your very son from the dead, then you have the power to help me through this situation. So I began attending a Christian academy. And their philosophy of God's will was that every young person should volunteer themselves for Christian service. That's why I'm here today. They said, you should surrender to serve God full time, was the way they said it, as a pastor or a missionary or a Christian school teacher, so on. And God will let you know if he has other plans for you. Okay, so I call this the baseball bat analogy. This is how they said it. If you do something else and God doesn't like what you're doing, he wanted you to go into the ministry and you decide to do something else, you don't want him to have to find you with a baseball bat and kind of knock you on the head and say, you're going the wrong direction. So I volunteered for the ministry. The other day, a while ago, someone told me that God was trying to speak to them and that God was tapping them on the shoulder. I like that analogy a little better. I think I'll go with that one from now on. Anyway, as a junior high student, I consciously chose to commit all my life to Christ's care and control. I chose a deeper commitment to Jesus and his cause. I was already a believer, but now I said, I'm volunteering. If you want me to be in the ministry, you have all my life, Lord, whatever you call me to do. I volunteered for the ministry. I signed up on the pastor's Bible, inside of his Bible, where he told me to. So now it was recorded that I had volunteered. Okay, so this was all cleared up with God now. In high school, though, and after I penned that on the Bible, you know, I was still struggling. I was an outstanding basketball player, mostly because it was a small Christian school league, so anybody could really be outstanding there. And after a tournament in which I had become the most valuable player for the tournament, the coach from one of the opposing teams came up to me while I was holding this trophy standing next to my parents, and he said some words to me that are etched in my memory. I'll never forget them. He said to me, "Vinny, if you'll put as much effort into your Christian life as you do into basketball," he said, "God will really use you." And he wasn't slamming me for not being spiritual enough, but he was just saying, "I see potential in you." And I'll never forget that. It made a big impact on me. Another time, real close to that, the mother of the girl I was dating told me, she said, "You will make a great youth pastor. You should go to Bible college first. And then you do that for a year, and if God's not calling you into the ministry, then you can transfer those credits into another school." It was a little bit better than the baseball bat analogy, so I thought, okay, I want to go study something different and go to this school, but this woman's saying she thinks I could go to this kind of school and give it a year. So I did. I surrendered to go to Bible college for my first year of school, and after the first year, I knew for sure that thing that I did in that guy's Bible, I knew for sure that God was definitely calling me into the ministry. And this was a turning point in my life. And the way that this came about is that I reserved a daily time with God for self-examination, prayer, Bible reading, in order to get to know God, to get to know his will for my life, and to find the power to do what he was telling me to do. It was during this time that God began snapping these chains that I had from my past. There was only one problem, and there was this one area that I didn't want God breaking any chains in. And since I had lost my mom when I was 10 years old, I, after that, always tried to find that missing affection from girls my age. This was an attempt to escape the pain of my loss. And I've learned from Celebrate Recovery these past several years that this is a form of self-medication. I was in pain, and I was medicating that pain. I wasn't using drugs, I wasn't using alcohol, but I was using people to help me feel good about myself. I had spent the last 8 years, you know, from 10 years old to when I was 18 or 19, I had spent all these years in this pattern, and I wasn't really willing to give it up because this was all I knew. But I knew I couldn't be in the ministry with an addiction of sorts. I needed purity of heart, but it had been so hard. For 8 years, I had been trying to get this purity of heart and just couldn't find it. Finally, I had to openly confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone that I trust. And I needed to voluntarily submit to this change that God was telling me he wanted to make in my life. And I began to find happiness as my greatest desire became to do what God was requiring of me in this place. No longer could I use girls or women as a source of happiness and fulfillment for my needs. I needed to begin to see God as a fulfillment of the needs, the deepest needs that I had. But I wasn't ready for a relationship with a girl at that time. I needed God to do his work in my life. Through Celebrate Recovery, I have written a list of all the people that I used during that time, and it's about 30. And if you do the calculations, it's about 4 girls a year that I used in this way. And I was amazed when I wrote them all down. I mean, I started with a small space, and then it took over all that space, and it took over the whole page. And it's not appropriate for me to go back and have conversations with any of those girls. We call it making amends, going back and trying to amend what happened to say, "I'm sorry that I treated you in this way." But what I can do is I can pray for them and pray that God would bless them and pray that God would help them. One summer while I was helping in a teen program at my church, they brought me a sobbing teenage boy. And they said, through the tears, this kid explained to me that his father had just passed away. And I think I might have been the only person in that room who probably knew what he was going through, having lost my stepfather and having lost my mother. And I was able to listen to him. I was able to tell him my story, and I was able to pray with him. And I decided that day that I was going to yield my life to God to be used to bring his good news to others, both by my example and by my words. He, God, put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see it and fear and put their trust in the Lord. And this is what God was doing with this young boy as he put his trust in the Lord. I found out the hard way that you shouldn't put your primary trust in people, that we have to trust God first. I wanted to be like my stepfather, I told you that. But he was someone who had turned aside to false gods, as this passage says. He was serious about making money, but not really serious about his relationship with God and how that would affect other people in this world. He ultimately found out the hard way that the false gods of money and fame and power don't satisfy. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods. Psalm 40 and verse 4. I also came to find out that even people who seem godly can let you down. As a teenager, the girls in my youth group revealed to me that our youth pastor was having sexual relations with them. One girl was suicidal, and I had to act quickly. I had to let someone know about this church secret so this girl wouldn't take her own life. And what happened was the church removed the youth pastor from his position. They placed him under church discipline, and he stayed in the church and was restored. And later he moved and became the pastor of marriage and family at his father's church. I could never understand this. And I've held on to angry feelings about it until even very recently. Another example of a tough situation. Later, there was an attorney who was charged with safeguarding a trust fund that came from my mother's life insurance that was set aside for me and my brothers. And this attorney used the money for other purposes. So when it came down to it, all of our money was gone, and so was the money of lots of other people. There was hundreds of thousands of dollars that he was supposed to have for us, and it was completely gone. And he was jailed, and we received from a bond or something like that 10% of what we had in our accounts. When I took that money and I invested it in a really great investment. But when I went to cash in the investment, the company that I was going to use to cash in the investment went bankrupt right during the time that I sent them my investment. They were supposed to pay me for it. Even though the president of the company assured me that I would definitely get my money, I didn't. And some years later, the pastor who founded and oversaw the church where I grew up was accused of having a relationship with his secretary. And I knew her well because I was teaching her kids in the school. And I knew my pastor well. He had founded our church. He was like a second father to me. His son was my best friend. I spent a lot of time in his home. This experience shattered our church, and I don't think anybody really knows what happened and what didn't happen, because it was just a storm after that. It was just a tornado of people being upset and angry. A few years later, someone from that church told me that my pastor only treated me nice when I was growing up because he knew about that trust fund I told you about earlier. I thought it was a lie, but nevertheless, I confronted my pastor in the last few years, and we cleared the air on this matter. Well, I had to evaluate these relationships. I had to offer forgiveness to those who had hurt me and who had hurt people that were dear to me. It wasn't easy, but I resolved that I couldn't carry the weight any longer. Through journaling and prayer and reflection on Scripture, I worked through these issues. Years later, I found in Celebrate Recovery that there is a worksheet. And this worksheet was an invaluable resource in helping me understand the type of resentment that I had could be eliminated by Jesus Christ. These were heavy burdens that I had been carrying for a long time, and now I found a way on paper to release them back to the Lord. Sidestepping these issues had given me momentary peace and false peace, temporary relief. But this inventory process has given me lasting results. Many of us here at Sober Recovery have used that inventory sheet for different situations in our lives to help us. Many, O Lord my God, are the wonders that you have done, the things you have planned for us no one can recount to you. Were I to speak and tell of them, they would be too many to declare. It's a wonder that God can help us through such resentments and bitterness that get so deeply lodged in our souls. Upon reception of my bachelor's degree in 1995, I married the North Carolina sweetheart that I met in college. Her name is Heather, and after several years of church work in Connecticut, we moved to Delaware. And we felt, after being in Delaware for about a year and a half, we felt the call to go come back to New England. And we thought, what better place to be involved in a church plant, a brand new church that's bringing life and vitality to a New England community. So that's what we did. With backing from a denomination, we made plans with another couple to plant the church in New Hampshire, southern New Hampshire. And just months from moving, our friends who were supposed to go with us, they backed out. They said, we're not going. Well, that's interesting, because the guy was going to be the pastor, and I was going to be like co-pastor, assistant pastor, whatever needs to be done kind of pastor. So now we were in a bit of a situation. And just a few weeks before we were really supposed to move, we had a house that we had under contract there in southern New Hampshire. And we got an email from the head official at the denomination, and the email said, you know what, the last conversation we had, it's pretty clear that you're headed in a different direction with what you feel God's leading you to do in this new church plant. So we bless you to go do that, but not with us. So even though we had a deposit on that home, we were able to get out of it, because now I didn't have a job there. So several months later, we found ourselves moving to Massachusetts to help another pastor establish a church here in Framingham. God used the twisted roads of circumstance to get us to a place where he could use us in big ways and in small ways. That church grew to 75 people within the first year, and I received a well-rounded education in the ins and outs of how churches operate. It was exciting for me. And we made a name for ourselves here in Framingham. People began to see our logo everywhere and to hear about our church and what was going on there. And after about a year, year and a half, something like that, we lost our rental agreement that we had with this school on the other side of Route 9 from here. And we had to move our whole church over to Marlboro into a school over there. The church relaunched itself there and began reaching new people. And due to business and personal concerns, the senior pastor of this church decided he needed to take a sabbatical. He needed to take 6 months off. And while he was doing that, I took the senior leadership of the church. And he eventually returned to the church, but he didn't come back with the kind of passion that he had originally when we started the church. And after several months, he announced that him and his family were going to move to Ohio, and they were going to help revitalize the church in Ohio and just kind of downsize and get back to the simplicity of what it means to be a Christian. And just life here had become too hectic for them. In the next year, as I was the senior pastor of this church, I hugged and said goodbye to about 90% of the congregation, because not that they didn't like me as their new pastor, not having employment here, healthcare costs, the cost of living, most of them just moved to other parts of the country. And so I was left with five families I loved, and we said, well, this is what God's calling us to do, is to love these five families. But the dream of the church that we originally planted seemed to be dying. And that's when we found out about Crossroads Community Church, where we are tonight. They had a similar vision, and they were looking for someone who had the same kind of passion and gifts that I had. And I could do the three things that I love the most in church life. That's what the job description was for this job that they were putting together here. So we knew that God was in this. So we merged our church, which was called Cornerstone Community Church, with Crossroads Community Church. And it was very difficult the first few Sundays when I got up to greet everyone at Crossroads to not say Cornerstone. It was very difficult to get it into my head. One of the first outreach works that I did here was a support group, and it has morphed into Celebrate Recovery. The first eight people who showed up to this group is an anxiety and depression group. The first eight people that showed up in that room, two of those people had been impacted by the original church that we planted. And so we went from Framingham to Marlboro, and then we all came back here and merged at this church. And the first experience I had with outreach here, two people that I had seen before, that had ministered to before, were in that group. God has a way of bringing things full circle and showing us that when we follow him, he will use us. And it may not take the path that we think it should, but it takes the path that he thinks it should. He works in that path no matter what it is. Just before we started the church in 1999, one of my mentors looked at me and he shook his bony finger in my face and he said, "Vinny, you're supposed to be a counselor." And I had no idea what that meant for me when he said that. He said, "God has allowed you to go through these things and to find recovery in your life for a reason." Later, the pastor of our church at that time said, "I wish someone in our church enjoyed counseling because it completely drains me. I hate counseling," he said. And so I started to get the idea that maybe God was calling me to do something about this. God used the twists and turns of the past 12 years to prepare me for what he wants me to do. And the easiest way for me to explain it is to say that God wants me to help people find the way to him. I continue my work here at Crossroads Community Church, counseling and leading the small group ministry and welcoming new people into the church. And in the last couple of years, overseeing the Celebrate Recovery ministry and also the divorce care ministry of our church. And I also work providing counseling in a counseling ministry where I've helped parents who are trying to work on parenting stuff with their kids, couples who have been through an affair and they're trying to keep their marriage together, working with teens who are struggling with depression, working with people through anger and addictions and all kinds of stuff. 12 years ago, I didn't realize that God would use me in this way. But God didn't waste any of these experiences that he allowed me to go through. He allowed me to go through them and he redeemed them. He's used them all for good in my life. And I want to bring him praise for that tonight. As I've worked through the Celebrate Recovery program, I've come to realize that God brought me through each of the steps of the Celebrate Recovery process, even before I knew there was a Celebrate Recovery. And I'm thrilled to have this process outlined, like on paper, so that I can share with others how I've come to a place of victory over some of the issues that held me captive for years. So I have a picture to show you. So I have four amazing girls, a wife, and three daughters. One of my daughters is eight, one of them is four, and the other one is 5 months. And they're such a joy to me, but all three of the pregnancies, I can't say were a joy. They tested my character, they tested my love, they tested my emotions. Some of you are laughing because you know. My wife has a rare condition, it's called hyperemesis. And for the first several months of each of these pregnancies, she couldn't keep any food down. Her stomach was upset. She actually lost weight instead of gaining any. And she was unable to work or care for our children. Worse, there was nothing that I could do to help her. When I first experienced this, I wanted to lock myself in my home office and get as far away from this as I could. I didn't want to see her in pain. And it was terrible. But since completing the last 2 years of Celebrate Recovery, I think I've come to a place where I'm more comfortable dealing with my own pain and dealing with the pain that I see in others. Celebrate Recovery has helped me face my denial of wanting to get as far away from the pain as possible. I've learned to move toward the pain and to allow God to bring truth and comfort to me in those painful areas. As a leader of our Celebrate Recovery men's small group, I want to take the truth and comfort that I've been given and share it with others. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my story with you tonight. and pray that God blesses you as you consider the principles that we read earlier in our meeting and that I kind of reiterated here in my story. And as we think about what Psalm 40 means to each one of us and the mud and the mire that we've gotten on us as we've walked this journey with Jesus. If you put these principles to work, I promise they will work for you because they're based on the very Beatitudes that Jesus spoke from his own mouth in Matthew chapter number 5. The principles are about inviting God to complete the good work that he's already started in you, and he will complete it. We can count on him. So I want to introduce you to Bill Hodgman. He's the new lead pastor here at our church, and our church sponsors this Celebrate Recovery meeting. So I asked him to be here tonight, and he's going to kind of close us out here. But if you'd like to stick around and meet some people, talk about what you've heard, and if you want to help clean up, that'd be cool too.
Oh, thank you for letting me join you tonight.